Auntie Leela, Chapter 4. All glories to Lord Gaurachandra, who is an ocean of mercy, and whose lotus feet are all auspicious. I offer my obeisances to Sri Krishna Chaitanya, the pride of the sannyas order, and his devotees. After delivering everyone in Kulia, the Lord proceeded towards Mathura, accompanied by his associates. He traveled along the banks of Ganga Devi, often drinking or bathing in her waters, thus fulfilling her long-standing desire. On the banks of the Ganga near the city of Gora lay Ramakeli, a town with a large Brahmin community. The Lord sojourned incognito here for a few days. But Lord Chaitanya's arrival could not be kept secret for long, just as it is futile to try to hide the sun. Soon men and women of all kinds and ages poured in from every direction, excited and flushed with pleasure. The Lord was, as usual, totally absorbed in divine ecstasy. Nothing could disturb him. He manifested all the ecstatic symptoms one after another, and he swooned again and again. The devotees, absorbed in the Lord's blissful mood, performed continuous kirtan, neglecting all other business. When the Lord would cry out in spiritual ecstasy, the sound could be heard by travelers miles away. Although most of the people were simple rural folk, ignorant of the intricacies of devotional service and mellows, by seeing the Lord in all his variegated splendor, they became very happy. They watched the Lord from a distance and offered their prostrated obeisances while chanting the holy name Hari, Hari. When the holy name entered Lord Chaitanya's ears, his bliss increased many times over. He lifted his arms and encouraged the devotees, saying, "Go on, chant, chant, chant." The Lord blessed the people with such an overwhelming feeling of joy that even the Muslims joined in chanting Hari, Hari. The Lord emanated so much compassion that even the Muslims offered him prostrated obeisances from a distance. The Lord had no thought in his mind other than kirtan and dancing. The crowd began to swell. Everyone watched the Lord entranced. No one had any desire to leave. The people were jubilant, and their tumultuous chanting filled the sky. The only sound to be heard was Hari, Hari. Within earshot of the kirtan was the assembly house of the ruling Muslim king, yet this did not dampen their spirits. They fearlessly chanted loudly, forgetting all attachments to home and family. In the meantime, the police inspector had gone to the king's palace and reported the arrival of a sannyasi in Ramakeli. He also reported that this sannyasi's continuous chanting of some ghostly mantra of the faithless had attracted a huge gathering. To this news, the king replied, "Tell me about this sannyasi. What is his name? What does he eat? Describe his appearance." The inspector said, "Your Majesty, I have never seen anything so marvelous. His beauty far excels that of Cupid. His complexion outshines the brilliance of gold. His tall, majestic body, with a slender waist and arms extending to his knees, is most charming. His lion-like neck, elephant-like shoulders, lotus eyes, and exquisite face, more effulgent than a million moons, are incomparably beautiful. His coral red lips, perfect set of pearly teeth, eyebrows arched like Cupid's bow, broad chest decorated with sandalwood paste, and full hips covered with cloth the color of the rising sun, completely capture the mind. His feet are like two blooming pink lotuses. His toenails are like shining mirrors. I think he must be a prince traveling in the dress of a sannyasi. The most remarkable thing about him is that his body, which is as soft as fresh churned butter, keeps falling to the ground with great force. He crashes down at least 100 times in an hour, yet his body remains unhurt, unscathed. The hairs on his body are always standing on end like a jackfruit. At times, he shivers so violently that hundreds of people cannot keep him calm. Tears continuously flow from his eyes like rivers, and sometimes he laughs loudly for hours at a time. Sometimes he falls to the ground overcome by the kirtan and remains lying unconscious, terrifying the onlookers. His dancing is a treat. He raises his arms and incessantly chants Hari, Hari, forgetting every other activity. The people who have gathered there from every direction have no desire to leave. I have encountered many sannyasis, mystics, and wise men in my lifetime, but I have never seen anyone as extraordinary as this sannyasi. Your Majesty, The arrival of this person in your land is indeed a great blessing. He does not eat or sleep. He is always absorbed in dancing and kirtan. The king, although grossly materialistic, marveled at the descriptions of the sannyasi. He called for Keshava Khan and, still doubtful, inquired from him, "Keshava Khan, I want your opinion on this matter. Tell me what you think about this person whom everyone calls Sri Krishna Chaitanya. Let me know in detail about the character of this powerful guru. People are running here from everywhere to see him. What brings him here?" Keshava Khan, who was a noble, upright gentleman, became wary. He answered, but without revealing all the facts, "Who says he is a famous guru? He is a mendicant sannyasi, a poor foreigner. He travels about living under trees." The king replied, "Do not refer to him as poor. It is offensive even to hear such things. This sannyasi is not an ordinary mortal. He is that person whom the Hindus call Krishna and the Muslims call Khuda. This kingdom runs under my direction, but the entire universe is controlled by him. Even in my own kingdom, there are many who are inimical to me, whereas everyone, everywhere, worships him with full surrender. Therefore, he must be the supreme personality of Godhead. If I would not pay staff salary for 6 months, they would have so many complaints against me. But in his case, I can see that people are maintaining themselves at their own expense and then going eagerly to serve him. Please understand, therefore, that this sannyasi is God. Do not say that he is some poverty-stricken mendicant." After a thoughtful pause, the king continued to speak. "Now hear my orders concerning this sannyasi. I do not want anyone to disturb him. He is free to go anywhere and preach anything he wants from his scriptures. Let him perform kirtan with the people and stay wherever he desires. Anyone who tries to stop him for any reason, be he the Qazi, police inspector, or anyone else, will be punished by death." With these words, the king retired to his inner quarters. So wondrous is the potency of Lord Chaitanya that even this king, Hussein Shah, who was responsible for desecrating and destroying hundreds of temples in Orissa, could appreciate his position. Although Hussein Shah was a fanatic and despotic Muslim ruler, even he accepted Lord Gaurachandra as the Supreme Lord. But the spiritually blind cannot see him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They shave their heads and become sannyasis, but when they hear eulogies of the Lord, they burn with envy. The whole universe resounds with panegyrics of the Lord, and ignorance is dissipated by hearing his glories. Anantashesh, Lakshmi Devi, Lord Brahma, and Lord Shiva are all intoxicated by relishing the super-excellent pastimes of the Lord. The Vedas sing hymns in his praise, describing his supreme lordship over everything. Anyone who is irritated by hearing the transcendental qualities of Lord Krishna Chaitanya, even if he is endowed with all good qualities, becomes malefic and a cause of distress to the Lord. On the other hand, if a person bereft of all good qualities remembers the Lord's lotus feet, he is immediately elevated to the spiritual abode of Vaikuntha. The concluding portion of this book reveals the transcendental activities of the Lord as he performed Sankirtan. The wise words of the king created new confidence in him among the pious people. They secretly assembled and began discussing this news. They said, "Our king's character is terribly tyrannical. He is always influenced by the motive ignorance. He has caused widespread devastation, demolishing thousands of temples in Orissa. Suddenly, by some divine arrangement, he is now being prompted by the motive goodness. His words strongly indicate this change. But if someone influential comes along and sways the king with ill advice against Lord Chaitanya, then he might have him brought before him, and then anything could happen. So we must immediately send a message to the Lord suggesting that this place, being always under the surveillance of the Muslim king, is unsafe, and so he must move on to the next village." A secret message was dispatched to Lord Chaitanya through a reliable and honest Brahmin. Meanwhile, the Lord was totally submerged in divine ecstasy, relishing the bliss within himself, and was continuously roaring like thunder. Millions of people chanted Hari, Hari as he danced in ecstasy. Nothing distracted him from his dancing, singing, and encouraging the others to sing. The Brahmin messenger stood there amazed at the sight, failing to find the right opportunity to speak to the Lord, who refused to converse even with his own associates. The Lord was swimming in the tides of ecstatic bliss. He was tasting the sweet nectar of devotion to himself, forgetting every other activity. Not finding an opportunity to speak to the Lord, the Brahmin approached his devotees. He said, You are all followers of the Lord, so please approach him and give him a message from the pious section in our village. The message is, there is no necessity to stay so close to the king's palace. The Brahmin offered his repeated dandavats to the Lord from a distance and left. The Lord's associates were worried by the implications of the message, yet they could not deliver it to him because he was oblivious to everything but his dancing. Raising both his arms, he ordered, "Sing, sing the name of Hari." The millions who swayed to the music joined in with clapping hands, singing Hari, Hari. Remembering the Lord's devotees removes all obstacles on the path of devotional service and severs the noose of material entanglement. The living entities are able to perform even the slightest activity only by the help of his energy. He is glorified in the Vedas as the supreme Brahman, the absolute truth, eternal and pure. His illusory potency, Maya, puts the living entity into illusion, causing him to forget his constitutional position and become shackled by the chains of material life. This same Supreme Lord has now appeared to liberate the conditioned souls by distributing the nectar of love of Godhead to everyone. Which king can make the Lord fearful? The Vedas declare that Yamaraj, the Lord of Death, and Death personified are the Lord's menial servants. Lord Gaurachandra, the son of Mother Sachi, is the Lord of both the material and spiritual planets. He continued kirtan with unbounded joy, unconcerned about anything else. The Lord had ignited the hearts of the millions of people who came to see him with such transcendental happiness that even they were unafraid of the king. So how could the Lord himself be intimidated by him? Although most of the spectators were very ignorant, when they saw Lord Chaitanya, they became fearless, even of death. Why then should the thought of a mere king alarm them? The jubilant chanting of Hari Hari filled the air as the crowd appreciated the presence of the Lord of Vaikuntha amongst them, singing and dancing freely. Suddenly, the devotees began to worry, and this was immediately felt by the Lord, who is the supreme soul within everyone's heart. He smiled and returned to his normal behavior. He then spoke, destroying the anxiety of his devotees. He said, "I know that you are very concerned, but why should the king call for me? I am happy to meet anyone who wants to meet me, but not everyone desires to see me. If the king wants to see me, then I will see him, but actually he has no power to order me to come to him. Only on my prompting can he do so. Many powerful kings, sages, demigods, and perfected yogis search arduously for me in the Vedas and fail to find me even after a long time. How then can an ordinary king see me? I have appeared on earth to propagate the congregational chanting of the holy names of God. In this way, I will deliver the sinful material world. Those demons who never before accepted my authority and lordship will weep in joy by chanting my names. I will vigorously distribute devotional service, which is sought after even by demigods, sages, and perfected beings, so that even the most abominable sinners, dog-eaters, and untouchables will receive it. But those who, intoxicated with education, wealth, family background, and knowledge, criticize and offend my devotees, will be deprived of everything and will never know my true identity. I declare that my name will be preached in every town and village on this earth. I have appeared in this universe so that people may seek after me, but nobody is doing so. Therefore, it is highly improbable that the king would want to see me." The Lord's words filled the devotees with hope and joy. He stayed in that village for another few days, performing kirtan and dancing, without the shadow of fear hanging over the people. Who can understand the Lord's mind? He then went back to Bengal instead of proceeding to Mathura. Lord Chaitanya told the devotees, "I am going to see the Lord of Nilachala." The supremely independent Lord, the source of the highest spiritual bliss, traveled southward, singing and dancing on the way. He stayed close to the Ganga all the way, and in a few days, he arrived at Advaitacharya's house. Advaitacharya spent his days blissfully absorbed in watching the wondrous activities of his son, neglecting all other work. I will now describe the wondrous activities of the child, which so captured the full attention of the father, Advaitacharya. The boy's name was Achyutananda. He was certainly the fit son of an able father. One day, an elevated sannyasi visited their house and spoke with Advaitacharya. The sannyasi was at first hesitant, then Advaitacharya offered his respects to him and seated him comfortably. Advaita inquired, "How can I serve you, master?" The sannyasi replied, "I have a few questions I want you to answer." Advaitacharya requested, "Kindly eat first and we can talk later." The sannyasi insisted, "First, I want to know the answers to my queries." Advaitacharya relented and said, "All right, please ask your questions." The sannyasi said, please tell what is Keshava Bharati's relationship with Lord Chaitanya? Advaitacharya considered the question and thought, there are two concepts to be considered here, social norms and spirituality. Although the Supreme Lord does not have parents, still we say, Krishna, the son of Mother Devaki. In the spiritual sense, the Supreme Lord does not need a guru, yet we find that he has one and we glorify him for it. Therefore, I will speak about the social norms first and the spiritual aspect later. After thinking in this manner, Advaitacharya said to the sannyasi, Sri Keshava Bharati is Lord Chaitanya's guru. You already know, so why do you ask? As he was speaking these words, Achyutananda came running into the room. Achyutananda was 5 years old. His charming, chubby body was naked and covered with dust. He was as beautiful as Kartikeya. At this age, he was already very knowledgeable, devoted, and extremely potent. When he heard his father saying that Lord Chaitanya had a guru, he became very angry, but he smiled as he said, Father, what did you say? Please repeat it. Do you really think that Lord Chaitanya has a guru? I cannot understand how you can dare say such a thing. If you can utter such words, then surely we are now in Kali Yuga. Maybe you have become affected by the insurmountable illusory potency of Lord Chaitanya, which deludes even Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva. It must be under the influence of the Lord's illusory potency that you have uttered a statement like, Lord Chaitanya has a guru. By Lord Chaitanya's desire, the entire cosmic manifestation enters into the pores of his transcendental body as he lies in the waters of the causal ocean. Many wise and powerful sages, proud of their status, sometimes find themselves confused and lost, as when Lord Brahma came out of the lotus which grew from the navel of Chaitanya. This was due to Lord Chaitanya's desire to participate in this pastime. Lord Brahma was lost and could not see or understand anything. Finally, he began meditating on the lotus feet of the Lord. The Lord, being satisfied, then gave him transcendental knowledge. With this knowledge, Lord Brahma created this material universe. This knowledge was then passed down to the great sage, Sanaka, and to others, who in turn propagated it by disciplic succession. How then is it possible that you say that this Supreme Personality, Lord Chaitanya, has a guru? You are my father and my instructing spiritual master, so I am to learn from you. Why then are you giving false instructions? Achyutananda became silent. Advaitacharya was filled with pride, mixed with unbounded joy. He cried out, dear son, and picked Achyutananda up in his arms, drenching him with tears of ecstasy. He said to his son, as a matter of fact, you are my father and I am your son. You have come to me as my son to give me spiritual instructions. I have certainly offended you, so please forgive me. I promise never to say such things again. Achyutananda became immediately shy, hearing his own praises, and hung his head. Overwhelmed on hearing Achyutananda's words, the visiting sannyasi fell to the ground like a stick, offering his obeisances. He said, he is truly the worthy son of Advaitacharya, like father, like son. All this is very wonderful to me. Here is proof of the Lord's inconceivable potency. Otherwise, how could such words come from the mouth of a mere child? I have chosen an auspicious moment to come visit Advaitacharya. I have seen a miracle. After offering repeated obeisances to Advaitacharya and his son, the sannyasi, feeling content and blissful, left, chanting Lord Hari's holy name. Achyutananda was indeed a worthy son of Advaitacharya, because he had taken complete shelter of Lord Chaitanya's lotus feet. Anyone who worships Advaitacharya but disregards Lord Chaitanya, even if he be Advaitacharya's son, will be doomed. Advaitacharya was so impressed with his son that he forgot all his other duties. He took him in his arms and wept in great satisfaction. He smeared the dust from his son's body all over his own body. He began to dance happily, saying, Lord Chaitanya's associate has appeared in my home. Who can know the extent of Advaitacharya's devotion as he danced with his son in his arms? Lord Chaitanya found Advaitacharya engrossed in dancing when he arrived at his house with all his associates. When Advaita saw that the dear Lord of his heart had arrived, he fell to the ground and offered his obeisances, chanting Hari, Hari. He immediately went into a state of intense ecstasy, oblivious to his body and home. The ladies of the house loudly chanted praises of the Lord. Lord Chaitanya firmly embraced Advaitacharya and showered him with tears of immense joy. Advaita fell to the ground and placed the Lord's lotus feet on his chest, weeping profusely. The devotees, amazed to see such wonderful loving exchanges between the Lord and his dear associate, were unable to contain their tears of happiness. Advaitacharya Prabhu composed himself and with utmost humility offered Lord Chaitanya a seat. The Lord sat down on an elevated seat surrounded by his associates. Meanwhile, Advaita Prabhu and Nityananda Prabhu embraced each other warmly, their hearts effervescent with joy. All the devotees offered obeisances to Advaitacharya, who in turn clasped everyone in a loving embrace. Only Vedavyas is capable of fully describing the transcendental joy that descended in Advaitacharya's house that day. Suddenly, Achyutananda appeared in that assembly and fell at Lord Chaitanya's lotus feet. The Lord quickly picked him up in his lap and bathed him in tears of love. The Lord and Achyutananda clung to each other lovingly. The devotees were moved to tears of joy, seeing the Lord's extraordinary mercy on this small boy. Achyutananda was dearly loved by everyone, and all the Lord's associates were very much loved and respected by him. Lord Nityananda and Swarup Damodar loved him dearly. He was amongst the foremost of Gadadhar Pandit's disciples. For these reasons, Achyutananda was considered by everyone to be the worthy son of an equally worthy father. The Lord was experiencing divine bliss to be amongst his old and dear associates once again. He remained for a few days in Advaita Prabhu's house, immersed in the ecstasy of kirtan. Advaitacharya's joy at having his dear Lord in his house increased daily. After the initial excitement, Advaitacharya turned his thoughts to other matters. He sent a messenger to Navadvip to inform Mother Sachi of the Lord's arrival in Shantipur. The messenger was transported in a palanquin for speed. He requested Mother Sachi to immediately accompany him back to Advaitacharya's house. Since Lord Chaitanya had left home, Mother Sachi had gradually become more and more immersed in an ocean of spiritual bliss of love of Godhead. She was unaware of external situations. She spoke of things that had no immediate relevance and sometimes seemed to be listening to some unseen person. Whenever she met anyone, she would ask, "Please tell me the news from Mathura, Vrindavan. How are Krishna and Balaram faring there? Is that sinful demon Kamsa continuing his tyrannical activities? How is that thief, Akrura, who stole my Rama and Krishna? I have heard that the demon Kamsa has been killed and that Ugrasen has been crowned the new king." Sometimes Mother Sachi cried out loudly, "Rama, Krishna, quickly go and milk the cows. I will sell the milk in the market." Sometimes she was seen running along with her arms outstretched, saying, "Hold him, hold him. Catch the butter thief. Let me see how you escape today. I will catch you and bind you." At other times she would say, "Come, let us go to the Yamuna for a bath." Often she wailed piteously with tears gushing from her eyes in such a way that melted even hearts of stone. When Lord Krishna would sometimes appear in her meditation, she would laugh joyfully for hours at a time. Then suddenly she would fall into an ecstatic trance lasting several hours. When she trembled, it was as if someone were lifting her up in the air and then hurling her to the ground. No one other than Mother Sachi could exhibit such ecstatic feelings of love of Godhead. Lord Chaitanya is certainly the unlimited reservoir of love of Godhead, Krishna. It was he who infused Mother Sachi with spiritual love. Who, therefore, can fully describe the various ecstatic transformations of Mother Sachi? Day and night, she was immersed in an ocean of devotional bliss. From time to time, when her consciousness focused on the present, she would worship the deities of the Supreme Lord. All her activities were devotional service to Krishna. The messenger from Shantipur arrived at a time when Mother Sachi was engaged in remembering Krishna. The messenger said, "Lord Gaurasundar has come to Shantipur. Come, Mother Sachi, let us immediately go to see him." Deeply moved by this news, Mother Sachi became indescribably blissful. The other devotees of the Lord were also jubilant. Gadadhar Pandit, Murari Gupta, and other beloved associates of the Lord accompanied Mother Sachi to Shantipur. When they arrived there, the news was quickly brought to Lord Chaitanya. The Lord rushed to meet his mother. Seeing her from a distance, he fell to the ground like a rod and offered obeisances. He circumambulated her many times, chanting verses and offering repeated dandavats. He prayed, "You are the universal mother, the embodiment of pure devotion, transcendental to all material inebrieties. By your gentle glance upon the living entities, they can develop love and attachment for the Supreme Lord, Krishna. You are devotional service personified. You have the potency to fulfill everyone's desires. You are, in fact, Ganga Devi, Mother Devaki, Yasoda, Devahuti, Prishni, Anasuya, Kashalya, and Aditi. They have all emanated from you and will finally merge in you. Who can describe your transcendental glories? You dwell in everyone's heart." Eulogizing his mother in this way, the Lord fell to the ground in joy, offering obeisances. Who other than Krishna himself can exhibit such extraordinary heights of devotion to father, mother, guru, or to any superiors? As he offered obeisances and chanted prayers, his whole body was bathed in ecstatic tears. Seeing her son for the first time after a long separation, Mother Sachi became inert with ecstatic bliss. While the Lord sang verses praising her, she remained in spiritual shock, as stiff as a wooden doll. The Lord continued exuberantly, "Whatever devotion I have for Krishna is due only to your mercy. The millions of servitors of the Lord who have even the slightest relationship with you are extremely dear to my heart. Anyone who simply remembers you will become free from all material bondage. Even Ganga Devi and Tulsi Devi, who are famous for purifying everything by their mere touch, feel privileged to have your association. You have given so much time, energy, and love in raising me from birth. I have been cushioned by your affection at every step of my life. I will never be able to repay this incalculable debt of love to you. You must be satisfied with your own wonderful qualities." It gave the Lord great satisfaction to glorify his mother. The devotees also experienced transcendental joy hearing him speak. Mother Sachi, or Ayi, as she is popularly known, knew that her son is the incarnation of Narayan, the Supreme Lord, and so is free to say whatever he wants to. She said, "Who can understand your words? As logs in the ocean are tossed about by the waves with no control over their direction, similarly, the living entities in this material ocean are swept away by the waves of your illusory potency. You are praising me and offering obeisances to me, but my understanding of all this is that you are fully independent and can act as you wish." The devotees greeted Mother Sachi's words with spontaneous appreciation. Who can really glorify the extent of Mother Ayi's love for the Supreme Lord? It was in her glorious womb that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Gaurasundara, appeared. If someone speaks the name Ayi, even without understanding its spiritual significance, he is relieved from all suffering by the transcendental potency of the word. Mother Sachi's heart was filled with immense satisfaction seeing her son. The devotees were swept away by waves of ecstasy. It is impossible for a mere mortal to fully describe the joy experienced by them. Even Lord Nityananda was overwhelmed with happiness seeing Mother Sachi's satisfaction. Advaitacharya recited prayers to Devaki Devi and offered repeated obeisances to Mother Sachi. All the devotees like Haridas, Murari, Sri Garba, Narayan, Jagadish, Gopinath, and others were touched by her joy. Whoever reads or hears these ecstatic narrations is enriched with the jewel of love of Krishna. Advaitacharya gained permission from the Lord for the fortunate Mother Sachi to cook for him. Bubbling with joy, Mother Ayi went to the kitchen thinking, "I am cooking for my Gaurachandra, who is the Supreme Lord Narayan." All varieties of foodstuff appeared there as if by magic. Many of the preparations she cooked are unknown to me, and so I have no name to describe them. Knowing that the Lord loves to eat shak, spinach, Mother Sachi prepared 20 varieties of it. In fact, each vegetable was prepared in 10 to 20 different ways. After cooking, she brought all the dishes and placed them neatly in the dining hall. She put tulsi buds on each dish. In the middle of the room, she spread a nice sitting mat for the Lord. The Lord entered the room with all his associates. When he saw the elaborate arrangements and the countless dishes, he fell down and offered dandavats. The Lord exclaimed, "It is not necessary to eat this transcendental food. Just by seeing it, one becomes free from all material entanglement. How can I sufficiently glorify the quality of this cooking? Simply by smelling this food, one develops pure devotion to Lord Krishna. I think that Krishna himself, along with his associates, must have already tasted it. The Lord then circumambulated the boga and sat down to eat. Taking permission from the Lord, the devotee sat down to watch him. As the Lord of the Vaikuntha planets ate, the fortunate Mother Ayi feasted her eyes on him. He tasted every dish that was there with childish relish, but amongst all the preparations, he preferred the different types of shak, eating them again and again. Thus, shak gained the special favor of the Lord. The devotees thoroughly enjoyed this scene. The Lord then began to explain the benedictions gained by eating different kinds of shak. He smiled and said, "This shak is known as achyuta. By relishing it, one quickly develops a special attachment for Krishna. The result of eating patal, pastuka, and kal shak is that one attains the association of pure Vaishnavas birth after birth. By eating salinka and helancha shak, one is not only freed from diseases, but achieves the platform of pure devotion to Lord Krishna." As the Lord ate, he described the transcendental benefits of eating each kind of shak. Everyone experienced such spiritual ecstasy that day while watching the Lord take prasad that only Lord Ananta Shesh is able to describe it in detail with all his thousands of tongues. In Kali Yuga, Lord Ananta Shesh has appeared as Lord Nityananda, the Abhidhut. Everything that I write is only by his mercy. All the details are described by Srila Vedavyas. Anyone who reads or hears these descriptions becomes free from the darkness of ignorance. After this pleasurable pastime of eating, the Lord got up and washed himself. As soon as he left his seat, the devotees pounced on his remnants. Someone said, "Why should a Brahmin take these remnants? I am a Sudra. Only I have the right to eat this." Someone replied, "I am not a Brahmin." Many just slipped in through the crowd and, taking a handful of prasad, ran away. Another person said, "Sudras are not eligible to eat remnants. Try to understand this by analysis. It is stated in the scriptures." Another said, "I do not want any remnants of food. I just want the food vessels." Yet another devotee said, "It has always been my duty to throw away the Lord's leaf plate, but now you are forcibly taking the remnants, simply manifesting your aggressive nature." In this way, the devotees used all their cunning to steal the nectarian remnants touched by the lotus mouth of the Lord. Considering that the food was cooked by Mother Ayi and then taken by the Supreme Lord, it is natural that everyone was so greedy for it. After happily licking their fingers, they washed and came and sat in front of the Lord. Glancing over the devotees sitting around him, the Lord spotted Murari Gupta. He smiled and said to him, "Murari, I hear that you have composed 8 verses about Lord Raghava. Please read them." Murari began to read the verses in Sanskrit as if in a trance of ecstasy. The translation of the verses is, "I constantly serve the lotus feet of Lord Ramachandra, the spiritual master of the three worlds. His brother Lakshman, who is Lord Ananta Shesh, has a bright golden complexion. He is dressed in kingly opulence and is always meditating on and serving his elder brother, Lord Ram. He is an expert archer and always walks in front of the Lord. I constantly serve the lotus feet of Lord Ramachandra, the spiritual master of the three worlds, who with his family slew Kara, Trishira, and Kabunda, thus clearing the idyllic forest of Dandaka of mischievous demons. It was he who killed King Bali and made friends with Sugriva." In this way, Murari Gupta recited all the 8 verses. Then on the Lord's instruction, he began to explain the meaning of these verses. Murari explained, "Lord Ramachandra, whose complexion is the color of fresh durva grass, is seated on a gem-studded throne, smiling benignly. Sri Janaki Devi, Sita, is seated on his left. He is the supreme archer, teaching everyone the art of archery. He is the desire tree, who more than fulfills all the desires of his devotees. His younger brother, Lakshman, is Lord Ananta Shesh. He is constantly absorbed in serving his elder brother and always walks ahead of him. His lustrous complexion is golden and he wears a stately golden robe. Lord Ramachandra, the pride of the Raghu dynasty, is the supreme teacher of everyone. I worship his lotus feet birth after birth. Bharat and Shatrughna fan him with whisks, and Hanuman and his army of monkeys kneel with folded hands, singing of his glorious activities. I pray that birth after birth I may sing of his transcendental qualities, for it was he who befriended and blessed Guha, who belonged to the lower caste of dog-eaters. The Lord willingly renounced his kingdom and crown on the instructions of his guru and went to live in the forest where he performed divine deeds. He killed King Bali, and then mercifully offering his friendship to Sugriva, he made him king. Everyone should take shelter of his lotus feet, for he is the Lord of all the three worlds, and he kindly liberated Ahaya. Worship the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord, who built a bridge across the ocean with the help of Lakshman and the monkey army, and later killed the demon King Ravana, who was powerful enough to defeat even Indra, the king of heaven. Worship the lotus feet of the best of the Raghu kings. By his mercy, the devout Bibhishan became the king of Lanka, although he was not in the least interested in the position. So wonderful are the Lord's wondrous activities that even the Yavanas, or Muslims, are eager to hear them. He always carries his bow to suppress the miscreants. He cares for his subjects as though they were his own children. By his mercy, all the residents of Ayodhya were transported to the spiritual sky without changing their forms and became permanent residents of Vaikuntha. Just worship the lotus feet of the Supreme Lord Raghavendra, who is eulogized in the Vedas as the Supreme Brahman, the Lord of the universe. Intoxicated by the nectar of chanting the Lord's holy name, Maheshwar, Lord Shiva, loosens his clothes, and Lakshmi Devi is eternally engaged in massaging his lotus feet. Thus Murarigupta recited and explained the 8 nectarian verses composed by himself in praise of Lord Ramachandra. Lord Chaitanya was very satisfied with him and placed his lotus feet on his head. The Lord said, "Listen, dear Gupta, I am blessing you that you may eternally serve the lotus feet of Lord Ramachandra. Whoever takes shelter of you and associates with you for even a moment will easily attain the lotus feet of Lord Ram." Hearing the Lord shower his blessings upon Murarigupta, the devotees loudly expressed their approval. In this way, the magnanimous Lord dispensed boons to the devotees. He was always surrounded by his bee-like associates who are eternally attracted to his lotus feet. Suddenly, a leper appeared in the assembly and approached the Lord. He threw himself down on the ground like a stick, groaning in pain. Then getting up, he lifted his arms high and began to wail loudly. He said, "O merciful Lord, you have risen like the sun on this earth just to dissipate the sufferings of material life. You are always moved with compassion by the distress of others, and so I have come to you. I am burning in the pain of leprosy. Kindly tell me how I can be relieved of this." When the leper had finished speaking, the Lord addressed him angrily in a thundering voice. He said, "Go away from here. Just by seeing you, one incurs sin. Even a very pious man who sees your face will have an inauspicious day. You are a wretched sinner and an offender of a Vaishnav. Much more suffering is in store for you. If you cannot even tolerate this pain, you contemptuous reprobate, how are you going to live through the sufferings in Kumbhapaka hell? A Vaishnav is so pure that the mere utterance of his name can cleanse the entire universe. Lord Brahma takes pleasure in singing panegyrics praising the Vaishnavs. One easily attains the inconceivable association of the Supreme Lord Krishna simply by serving a Vaishnav. In fact, there is nothing superior to the worship of a Vaishnav. The Srimad Bhagavatam unequivocally explains that a Vaishnav is more dear to Lord Krishna than even elevated personalities like Lord Anantashesh, Lakshmi Devi, Lord Brahma, and Lord Shiva. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna says, "O Uddhava, you, my devotees, are more dear to me than anyone else. Although Brahma is my son, Shiva my partial expansion, Sankarshan my brother, and Lakshmi Devi my wife, they are not as dear to me as you are. Not to mention others, even I myself in my deity form am not as dear. So anyone who offends or criticizes a Vaishnav must suffer terrible reactions life after life. A person's piety, education, and austerity are rendered useless by criticizing a Vaishnav. Lord Krishna refuses to accept worship from one who has offended a Vaishnav. Mother Earth feels blessed when the Vaishnav dances on her. Srivas Pandit is such an elevated Vaishnava that the mere sight of him destroys all nescience and sin. When he dances, lifting his arms to the sky, all ill fortune vanishes in the heavenly abodes. But you are so demoniac that you have offended him. Your leprosy is a mere reminder of your offenses. The actual punishment is yet to come, to be meted out by Yamaraj, the god of death. Therefore, I do not even want to see you, and I am not the one to deliver you. The leper quietly heard the Lord's chastisement. Then, with utmost humility, holding straw in his teeth, he began to speak. He prayed, "In my ignorance, I have destroyed myself. Delirious with the material disease, I have grievously criticized and offended a Vaishnava. For this heinous act, I deserve this painful punishment. Now, my Lord, please think of my deliverance. It is the nature of saintly personalities to heal the suffering of the wretched and forgive the blasphemers. Therefore, I have taken shelter of you. If you turn me away, who will save me? You know the penances for the different sinful activities. So as a kind father to all, please tell me what I must do to atone for my offenses. As I have sown by Vaishnav Aparad, so I have painfully harvested my grief." The Lord replied, "Leprosy is just the first punishment for an offender like you. The worst is yet to come. Yamaraj has 8 locks, 40,000 types of excruciating punishments waiting for offenders of your kind. You should go immediately to Srivas Pandit and throw yourself at his feet. It was Srivas Pandit whom you offended, so you can be excused by his mercy alone. If a thorn is stuck in the throat, it has to be removed from the throat by another thorn. It is not that when a thorn gets stuck in the feet, the shoulders have to be treated. This is the only means for your deliverance. Srivas Pandit is very elevated and intelligent. If you beg him, then he will surely forgive you." The devotees loudly expressed their approval of the Lord's perfect and honest instructions. The leper paid his obeisances to the Lord and the devotees and hurried off to see Srivas Pandit. Out of his causeless mercy, Srivas Pandit forgave the leper for all his offenses and saved him from the worst fate. The Lord had clearly described the horrific results of offending a Vaishnava. A person who, in spite of hearing this, still criticizes and blasphemes the Vaishnavas will be personally punished by Lord Chaitanya. If one sees two Vaishnavas quarreling, one should never think that something is amiss or that there is enmity between them. Such quarreling is in fact transcendental and pleasing to the Lord. The arguments and abuses exchanged by Rukmini Devi and Satyabhama Devi, although sounding like fights, were not actually serious because they are forever united in their service to their common Lord and Master. There is no enmity between Vaishnavas. The Supreme Lord himself instigates these fights due to his frolicsome nature. If anyone foolishly sides with one Vaishnava against another, he is doomed due to offending a Vaishnava. The Vaishnavas are the extensions of the Lord's limbs, so how can one benefit by serving him with one hand and inflicting pain on him with the other? One who has developed this vision becomes steady in devotional service. One who understands that Lord Krishna and his devotees, the Vaishnavas, are identical, and with this knowledge serves the Lord, can easily cross the ocean of nescience. One who hears, glorifies, and understands these transcendental subjects can always avoid Vaishnava Aparad. The Lord remained for a few more days in Shantipur, enjoying his stay in Advaita Acharya's house. Soon it was time to celebrate the auspicious appearance day of Srila Madhavendra Puri. Although there is no difference between Madhavendra Puri and Advaita Acharya, Advaita Acharya considered himself to be Madhavendra Puri's disciple. It is certain that Lord Gaurasundar is eternally present in Madhavendra Puri's body. His devotion to the Supreme Lord is unparalleled. By Lord Krishna's grace, the Lord's transcendental potencies were fully manifest in him. Kindly hear attentively how Advaita Acharya became a disciple of Sri Madhavendra Puri. Before the advent of Lord Sri Chaitanya, the entire planet was bereft of any devotional feelings towards the Supreme Lord. But even then, Srila Madhavendra Puri, by the special mercy of Lord Chaitanya, was constantly experiencing devotional ecstasy and manifesting all the ecstatic symptoms. He was so totally absorbed in meditating on the Supreme Lord Krishna that he was not aware of what he was doing. While walking on the streets, he would suddenly start to dance very gracefully and chant the holy name. Sometimes, due to intense devotional feelings, he would go into a spiritual coma lasting several hours. At times, experiencing acute love and separation from the Lord, he would shed torrential tears. Sometimes he would break out in loud laughter, and, intoxicated by the nectar of love of Godhead, he would walk around naked, unaware of his condition. Srila Madhavendra Puri spent his days happily relishing his sublime relationship with Lord Krishna, but the absence of devotion amongst the general populace disturbed him and made him morose. He gave much thought to alleviating the suffering of the people. He finally arrived at the conclusion that the Supreme Lord Krishna must appear. At that time, the people had no interest in or understanding of the purpose of celebrating festivals of Lord Krishna's pastimes or holding night-long kirtans glorifying him. Their idea of a perfect religious activity was to stay up all night listening to songs about the demigoddess Mangal Chandi. The only gods they knew were demigods like Shasti and Vishahari, whom they worshipped ostentatiously. Many persons worshipped demons and ghosts with offerings of animal flesh and wine, simply to increase their wealth and dynasty. Their greatest enjoyment was listening to banal songs sung by equally mundane singers. It was a sign of great piety if someone uttered the names of God like Govinda or Pundarikaksha once a day at the time of the morning bath. People were so steeped in the mode of ignorance and deluded by Lord Krishna's Maya that they had no conception of who is a Vaishnav, what is Krishna Kirtan, why devotees dance and weep in ecstasy during Kirtan. Srila Madhavendra Puri was deeply pained by the godlessness of the people, yet he found no one to speak to about it. He approached sannyasis thinking that being in the renounced order, they would be sympathetic to his concern. To his dismay, he found that they were polluted by the desire to become one with God, so he gave up trying to talk to them. He felt forlorn because he could find no one with whom to discuss Lord Krishna's pastimes. Even learned scholars, yogis, hermits, and sannyasis never guided the people to serve the Supreme Lord. All of them were interested only in exhibiting their learning by presenting logic and argument. In fact, they had become agnostics who refused to accept and revere the deity forms of the Supreme Lord. Seeing these negative conditions and finding himself all alone, Srila Madhavendra Puri decided to go to the forest to live away from society. He lamented, "Why am I searching everywhere for a Vaishnav? What hope is there of meeting one when the people in general have no appreciation for devotees? I will go to the forest where I do not have to associate with non-devotees." Around the time he made up his mind to withdraw from society, he met Advaita Acharya by divine arrangement. Sri Advaita was also greatly afflicted for the same reason. He felt despondent, seeing that the lives of the people were empty and meaningless without devotion to the Supreme Lord. However, in spite of such adverse conditions, he had, by the Lord's mercy, continued to speak about devotional service to Lord Krishna. In his discourses on the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam, he always stressed devotional service, which is, in fact, the essence of these scriptures. So when Sri Madhavendra Puri came to Sri Advaita's house, it was a wonderful meeting of highly elevated Vaishnavas. Recognizing all the signs of saintliness in Srila Madhavendra Puri, Sri Advaita immediately fell to the ground, offering his obeisances. Madhavendra Puri picked up Sri Advaita and embraced him warmly, drenching him with tears of spiritual ecstasy. They sat down and entered the unlimited ocean of nectar of Lord Krishna's pastimes. Absorbed in their discussion, they forgot about themselves and everything else. Srila Madhavendra Puri was such an elevated devotee and lover of Lord Krishna that just by seeing a blackish cloud, he would become unconscious due to uncontrollable spiritual agitation. Hearing Lord Krishna's name put him in ecstasy, and roaring loudly, he would manifest various symptoms of divine love. Sri Advaita could see all these Vaishnav qualities in Srila Madhavendra Puri. He was extremely pleased to meet him and wanted to hear spiritual instructions from him. This was how the two spiritual stalwarts had met. Since their meeting, Sri Advaita Acharya had always celebrated Srila Madhavendra Puri's appearance day with great festivity, leaving aside all other work. So now he applied himself fully to commemorating this special occasion. Lord Chaitanya and his associates were also very happy to join in the festivity, especially seeing how vigorously Sri Adwaita went about decorating and making endless preparations for the celebration. Many people attracted to the saintly qualities of Srila Madhavendra Puri brought paraphernalia necessary for the festival. The devotees divided the duties for the preparations amongst themselves according to their capabilities. Mother Sachi accepted the responsibility for all the cooking. The housewives gathered around her and began to prepare things. Lord Nityananda, who was always self-satisfied, wanted to serve and worship the Vaishnav. One devotee expressed his desire, "I want to make all the sandalwood paste." Another said, "I will make the flower garlands." "And I will fetch water," said another. "Then give me the duty of washing the floors," said yet another. Another devotee said, "All right then, let me wash the feet of all the Vaishnavs." Everywhere, devotees were very busy. Some were spreading the multicolored cloth awning overhead and tying the corners to stakes. Others hurried to bring vegetables, oils, and so on to the kitchen. Many devotees engaged in kirtan and dancing, and some joined in playing the gong and blowing conch shells. The jubilant devotees loudly chanted Hari, Hari, while they enthusiastically performed their various services. Everyone was gripped by the festive mood. Happy tumult echoed everywhere. The loud chanting of the holy name, the blowing of conch shells, and the sounds of cymbals, gongs, and drums transformed Sri Adwaita's house into Vaikuntha. The Lord was very satisfied with the elaborate arrangements. He went around the house looking at everything. A couple of rooms were packed with bags of rice. In another room, firewood was stacked like high mountains. Several rooms being used for cooking had innumerable pots strewn everywhere. A few rooms were filled with lentil dal. About seven rooms were packed with clothes. Room after room was filled with flat rice, puffed rice, and leaf plates. It was impossible to count the number of bananas, coconuts, and big lumps of gur molasses lying around. There were many rooms filled with all sorts of vegetables like patal, aubergines, banana tree stems, potatoes, varieties of spinach, and so on. There were rows and rows of large containers filled with milk, yogurt, and cream. There were piles of sugar cane and large vessels of oil, ghee, and salt. It is impossible to describe the variety and quantity of the ingredients which had miraculously appeared. The Lord was filled with wonder, for he knew that it was not humanly possible for one person to accomplish all this at such short notice. He said, "Such a manifestation of opulence cannot be the work of an ordinary mortal. I feel strongly that Sri Adwaita must be Mahesh, Lord Shiva. This miracle is possible only for Mahadev. Adwaitacharya must be the incarnation of Lord Shiva." The Lord smiled and kept repeating these words. In this manner, the Lord subtly revealed the actual spiritual identity of Adwaitacharya. One who is pious will accept these statements of Lord Chaitanya with great spiritual joy. Those non-believers who have no faith in the Lord's words will be confronted by Adwaitacharya himself as an all-consuming conflagration. Although Sri Adwaita is inherently very compassionate, and his shelter is as cooling as the rays of millions of moons, he transforms himself into the terrible form of all-devouring death to those who have no faith in Lord Chaitanya. The Srimad Bhagavatam clearly declares that anyone who utters the name of Lord Shiva, even without proper understanding of the esoteric truth about him, is immediately absolved of all sins. A wretched person who denounces Lord Shiva's name and feels depressed upon hearing it is certainly thrown into an ocean of despondency. As stated in Srimad Bhagavatam, anyone who utters the name Shiva, consisting of two syllables, just once, even without any faith, is purified of all his sins. Lord Shiva's orders cannot be disobeyed. He is famous for being completely pure-hearted. Yet you are trying to be inimical to such an exalted personality. Shame on you. You are the embodiment of all misfortune. Lord Krishna himself says that no one can worship him and not worship Shiva. One cannot develop love for Lord Krishna if he disregards Lord Shiva, who is so dear to Lord Krishna. It is said in the Srimad Bhagavatam, How can anyone render devotional service to me, Lord Krishna, without worshiping my dear devotee Shiva in the proper devotional mood? A person who does not respect Shiva is envious of the Vaishnavas and is a sinful reprobate. In the Skanda Purana it is said, one should first worship Lord Krishna, the cause of all causes, and then worship the best of the demigods, Lord Shiva. Then all the other demigods should be worshipped with great faith and devotion. Sri Advaita Acharya is accepted by the saintly personalities as Shiva himself. This is so because Lord Chaitanya gave sufficient indications to establish this truth. Naturally, unintelligent persons raise clamorous objections against such truths because they cannot fathom Sri Advaita Acharya's transcendental potencies. Thus the Lord went around observing the arrangements, which were so elaborate that it is impossible to describe them in detail. The Lord was very pleased and began to glorify Sri Advaita to everyone. He then returned to the site of the kirtan. His presence immediately accelerated the enthusiasm of the kirtan and drowned the devotees in a deluge of divine nectar. Devotees danced in every direction, singing and clapping, their uncontained joy increasing with every passing moment. Far above all other sounds was the clear singing of the holy names of God. The devotees were shining with a brilliant effulgence. Their bodies were decorated with sandalwood paste and flower garlands. The Lord's associates were all very dear to him. Their joyous singing of the holy name spread everywhere, purifying the entire universe. Lord Nityananda, tall and impressive like a wrestler, danced about like a little boy, chuckling with pure innocent glee. Sri Advaita Acharya was totally absorbed in dancing, unaware of the passage of time. Haridas Thakur and all the other devotees danced and sang jubilantly. After first inspiring everyone else to dance, Lord Chaitanya himself joined in. The devotees danced around him, keeping him in the center. The whole day passed in the ecstasy of dancing and kirtan. Finally, the Lord sat down with all the devotees. Sri Advaita begged permission from the Lord to prepare for eating and busied himself making the necessary arrangements to serve prasad to all the Vaishnavas. The Lord sat down to eat with his devotees, who sat around him as usual, wanting him to be in the center. The Lord and his devotees looked more effulgent than the luminaries shining in the dark purple sky. Mother Sachi had prepared a delicious feast in honor of Sri Madhavendrapuri. There was an incredible variety of rice preparations, vegetables, and sweets. The Lord relished the transcendental delicacies while speaking about the glories of Srila Madhavendrapuri between mouthfuls. It was difficult to say which he enjoyed more. He said, one who is fortunate enough to taste this wonderful prasad prepared in honor of Srila Madhavendrapuri's appearance day is immediately benedicted with loving devotion to Lord Krishna. After finishing prasad, the Lord got up and washed himself. Then he sat down again. Sri Advaita brought sandalwood paste and many flower garlands and placed them before the Lord. The Lord garlanded and smeared sandalwood paste on Lord Nityananda and Swarup Damodar Prabhu with great affection. Then he garlanded and smeared sandalwood paste on all the Vaishnavas one by one with his own hands. The devotees were extremely happy to receive these directly from the Lord. They loudly chanted the Lord's holy name, making a joyous clamor that is impossible to describe. There was no way to measure the pinnacles of ecstasy experienced by Sri Advaita, for he had the Lord of Vaikuntha himself as his guest. It is not humanly possible to fully describe all these transcendental pastimes of the Lord. The different activities performed by the Lord within the span of a single day could not be recorded by anyone, even if he were allowed a million years to do it. As a bird flying in the sky is unable to find its limits, similarly, one is able to know and understand the pastimes of the Lord only as far as the Lord empowers him to. As a wooden doll is completely controlled by the puppeteer, I am able to say only as much as the Lord allows me to. Although I do not know the chronological order of these pastimes, I am somehow describing them. I humbly beg at the feet of all the Vaishnavas forgiveness for my offenses in this effort of writing. One who listens to these transcendental topics will certainly attain loving devotion to Lord Krishna. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Lord Nityananda are my life and soul. I, Vrindavan Das, humbly offer this song